Hey everybody, and welcome to maybe the last episode of Radio Free Nintendo from this E3. I guess it remains to be seen, but this is day three, our second show of the day, and I'm your host, Jonathan Metz. I'm with the E3 crew. I'll introduce them as they come up to the microphone here. We are back at TYP's house, and E3's over, and the boys are playing Brawl. So this is going to be the Brawl cast. We've turned down the audio, but I'm going to rotate them in and out of here one at a time. So you might hear some button clacks and joystick clicks and laughter and cursing and other things in the background because we've got a big screen Brawl match going on right here in this very room. So first up, I'm here with Jared. Jared did a smashing job on the video for this E3. Now, Jared, you've done some daily wrap-up, daily video roundup articles. I imagine that's a good place to go. What do you think are some of the highlights of the videos that you took? Anything like really interesting, in, just in terms of maybe something that hasn't been seen before in video form, or you know, something that you really think people should check out?
As far as the videos, I would say that probably the big thing we have is I found the warp zone location in Super Mario Brothers 3DS. During the Nintendo Roundtable, they had hinted that there was a warp zone in the game, and both TYP and I were basically just searching for it during the last day, and we really were not finding it, having no clue. The hint had been like turtle shell or something like that, you know, Koopa shell. And only one level in the game had that, which was the Mario Underworld level, which happened to be numbered World 1-2, you know, just like, you know, the original Super Mario Brothers. So finally, I pretty much was doing everything in that stage. And I was able to find it. You know, I know it's sort of a spoiler. If you don't want to find out how to do it, don't watch the video. But if you don't mind, since it is the first warp and the first world, and, you know, it's, you know, check it out. It's up there. And we have a couple other cool videos. I would recommend watching the 15 minutes of Luigi's Mansion. It's the entire demo. It was TYP playing. And, you know, we have a couple other cool things, and most of the 3DS stuff has direct feed sound, so it's cool.
Yeah, I mean, you did a really nice job, you know, trying to get the best quality possible, whether it was over someone's shoulder or we really didn't have much luck getting direct feed video for the most part, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, we did not get any direct feed video. Everyone turned us down.
Yeah, I mean, and you can't really do that with 3DS anyway, but for things like Wii games and Wii U games, well, for Wii U, certainly Nintendo has strict control over that right now, and they weren't allowing that, and Nintendo doesn't really allow that kind of thing in general. And then a lot of the third parties either weren't showing very many Wii games, or if they were, they weren't allowing it either. So, but you took a lot of over-the-shoulder stuff, and you definitely know what you're doing with that. And then, yeah, I mean, I saw a lot of sound plugs and things like that. So, I mean, if you like to hear the music in the demos, actually, I kind of want to go back and watch some of that because a lot of times I don't get to hear it even if I played the demo. There's a few cases where I plug in. I did plug in for Resident Evil Revelations, which is maybe my DS game of the show. And that was part of the reason I was actually extremely impressed with the audio design in that. And I was really glad that I was able to hear it when I played it because, you know, the Resident Evil. Oh, okay. Yeah, Neil's saying that by the second day they had pretty much added headphones to all the 3DS demos at Nintendo's booth because you really couldn't hear them at all on the first day. So I plugged in my own when I played it, and let me tell you right now, if you like Resident Evil 4, Resident Evil Revelations is exactly what you want on the 3DS, and it works incredibly well in terms of being seriously creepy. The controls are excellent. In fact, I'd say they're probably the best controls I've ever experienced in a Resident Evil game. In fact, when you're aiming down sights, you know, when you've got the R shoulder button held in, you can actually move around in every direction and turn while aiming. So if you held that button down, you could pretty much play it like a first person shooter, but I don't think you would want to. I think there are plenty of reasons to not do it that way other than just being maybe less comfortable. But that game, just the sound design was really impressive, and also the graphics are stunning. I mean, I think the only game I saw that competes with it graphically is probably Nano Assault from Shinen and Majesco. And you know, I fully expected that game to look amazing, because Shinen's been doing stuff like that since Iridium on Game Boy Advance, and then Nano Stray on DS, and now this is the successor to those games. And it looks ridiculous on 3DS. It looks incredibly good. But yeah, that and Resident Evil Revelations were the two most impressive things I saw on 3DS, at least in terms of graphics. So anyway, you know, Jared, you spoke about some of the videos that you took, some of the ones you'd recommend. In general, what did you play on the third day? What stood out to you? What would you like to highlight here for the people before we wrap up E3?
For the third day, I actually didn't play too many things, but I guess from E3, things that I really enjoyed that I don't think too many of the other guys played was Centipede Infestation. Mm-hmm. It pretty much is very similar to Geometry Wars, actually. You know, you use the left stick to move around. The one level I was playing was just a small area, so, you know, it pretty much is just like, you know, a rectangular area. It seemed to be like in a forest-like setting, and you just had all these bugs coming at you, not centipedes for most of the level, and then you would aim with the, you know, Wii Remote IR, and the controls felt very smooth, and I felt myself, like, immediately going into, like, the Geometry Wars mindset, because all the bugs were, like, going everywhere, and, you know, just quickly trying to shoot them and avoid them. And then towards the very end of the level, centipedes actually did appear, two giant centipedes, and they had a lot of cool motions and things that, and it was fun just avoiding them, and they would the centipedes would like go together, and it was actually really cool.
Yeah, and Neil wants me to note that game is developed by WayForward for both Wii and 3DS. And by the way, I should mention that Jared is a disgustingly good Geometry Wars player. So if he's comparing Centipede to that in a favorable way, then that's probably a pretty high endorsement. I didn't really play it, but I saw you guys playing it, and it did look pretty good. The graphics weren't great, but it looked like it played really well, and it looked like it was a lot of fun. And I did play it a little bit, actually, and I liked it too. Jared, do you want to switch out with someone?
Sure. I guess there was one other thing I wanted to mention.
Go ahead.
I think you guys had spoke about it on another of the shows, but I wanted to bring up Chase Me for Wii U again. I just want to say I really think that game possibly could be the system seller for I loved Pac-Man Verse. I thought that was one of the best games, and I had a lot of fun during college playing that with my roommates. And like, basically, it's just an advanced version of Pac-Man Verse. And basically, the Wii U controller allows you to have in Pac-Man Verse you had just the basic Pac-Man level design, but now with Chase Me, you had a giant level with tons of like mazes and like different areas to go in, and because of the controller so big, you can see all those areas, and you just had a ton of places to hide, and it really was just a lot of fun.
All right, great. I got to play it a bit myself, and I enjoyed it as well. So when I played it, the Mario Cap character, the one who's trying to evade and avoid being caught, was being played by Mark McDonald, and I was from 8-4 and the 8-4 podcast. And I was playing one of the Toads, actually the Granny Toad in the yellow suit, and I actually managed to catch him. So I told him that it was exciting for me because I listened to their show, and if they end up talking about that on the show, then I'll be part of the story. You know, whether they probably wouldn't be able to name me anyway, but I'll hear it and I'll know that. That I was the one who got Mark. So it was really exciting for me. And yeah, I had a really good time with it as well. So I guess now we'll switch out and you can get back into the Smash Brothers and one of these guys can come over and talk to me. And while they sort that out, I think I'm going to talk about another Wii U game because today I got to play Ghost Recon Online. And This was interesting. I mean, we saw the multiplayer demo of it last night at the developer roundtable, but this won't mean very much to the people at home, but this was a game that was quite difficult to access at the show, actually. There were only two demo units of it at all of E3, unless there was one back in the Ultra VIP area of Nintendo, but I didn't see one when I was back there, and I got back there by a fluke anyway. That was mostly for, like, really high-level retail partners and stuff like that. But in the main booth, there were basically Wii U demo units lined up on either side of the booth, and then there was an area at the top over on a kind of a balcony area for press tours. And we got to go up on the first day of the show. We got to go up to the press tour area up on the second level and play all the Wii U we wanted to, which was great. You know, I mean, that's how we got all of our coverage on the first day. But the Ghost Recon demo wasn't up there. So actually, pretty much the only way that you could get in to play it was to wait in that four-hour line with everyone else. And, you know, being media and having a lot of appointments and games that we have to cover, we just can't do that. We can't wait in line for that long just to cover one game. So I was concerned that we might not be able to cover this game because it was so difficult to see. It was so inaccessible. But Jared, I think on the second day, managed to talk his way into the demo somehow. And then I got a text from James today sort of giving a general set of instructions on how we might be able to do this ourselves. So James got to play it, and then I went over with Neil a little bit later, and we tried it, and it worked for us too. So I ended up getting to play Ghost Recon Online, thank goodness. A few of us did, actually. And it was interesting. You know, it's a third-person shooter. It's cover-based, so there is, you know, certainly you can compare it to something like Gears of War. In the demo they had, this was a single-player demo, and it's not clear whether the final game will even have a single-player mode. This might have just been thrown together for E3 just to show it off. But you were basically choosing one of three character classes and then running around this stage and fighting these robot drones that were they were kind of like turrets, really. They moved around a little bit, but not much. And they weren't very interesting in combat. I mean, they shot at you, but they weren't very, very mobile, and they were kind of really spaced out and not very powerful. So you could kind of get used to the controls, but as a gameplay demo, I don't think it really showed you what was cool about this game. And I definitely got the sense that they kind of threw this together in a short period of time. In fact, I think the Wii U version of that game has not been in development for very long. I think they really put something together as quickly as possible so they could have something to show at E3. But you know, the game controlled quite well, because you're basically using dual joysticks, you know, for this, just like you would in a lot of other shooters. It really, I think, brought light to the fact that the Wii U joysticks, for one thing, I should say that they're really more like the circle pad on 3DS. They rise up a little bit more. They look like a little miniature Rolo candy, you know, in that shape, because they're kind of like a circular trapezoid, but then there's this little ridge on the top. And the ridge is nice because it keeps your thumb from sliding right off of the nub. But the problem is that it's large enough that your thumb, I don't know, for me, the tip of my thumb that it was resting in, it didn't fill up the entire nub. that ring on top of it. And so I felt my thumb kind of sliding around inside of the top of the joystick. And it made me wish that that it had some kind of internal concentric rings like the one on the N64 or even the nunchuck, you know, so that it gave a little bit of grip on towards the center of the nub and not just a ring around the edge to keep your thumb from sliding completely off of it. I don't know if that makes sense. Neil's sitting next to me, and maybe he can make a comment on that.
Well, I guess kind of, I totally get what Johnny's talking about from having also played Ghost Recon. And I think my problem, biggest problem with it was that I had a lot of trouble kind of fine tuning my aim with it because my thumbs didn't seem to like fit perfectly there. Like fine tuning it was tough. I guess maybe because it was sliding around or something like that. But I mean, other than that, the Ghost Recon game, as far as how it uses the touchscreen on the Wii U controller, looks like it could be really cool, especially because it has that 3D map that you can tilt the controller and kind of see different angles of it, which I thought was really neat. It looked a lot like Johnny pointed out, like the Metroid Prime maps, which I think are pretty cool and would look a lot cooler if you could kind of tilt the scene more, because I always had trouble kind of controlling and maneuvering through those with, you know, a stick on the GameCube, or I don't even remember how they were in Metroid Prime Trilogy.
All right. Well, now that I've got Neil over here and Jared, well, he was playing until I guess he ran out of stock. Is that how it worked? Yeah. Yeah. So Jared's waiting to play the next round right now. But Neil, what did you write down here as the highlights that you wanted to address for the E3 wrap up?
I think I've talked about the other things that I've done throughout the show. I mean, as far as like the Nintendo games, I mean, we've talked about that. You can read it all on the site. But the one thing from the third day that kind of stood out to me was I met with Jules Watson from Renegade Kid, and they're making Mutant Muds, which is a 2D side-scroller that's going to come to the eShop hopefully later this year. And it seems to be heavily inspired by the Virtual Boy Wario Land game, which is pretty damn cool. It's this nice, like, you know, I wouldn't say it's 8-bit. It's probably something more than that, but it looks very, very basic as far as the layout there in the game. It's all sprite based. The worlds are really bright and colorful, though. You know, you can jump into the foreground, jump into the background. You play as a little kid, I believe his name is Max, and you have a water gun that you shoot at muds, and then that's how you defeat them. And the water gun kind of shoots like little bullets out there, so basically shooting a gun. He can jump and he can hover, which is cool. And there's also these different power-ups that you can, temporary power-ups, which seemed a little weird, that you can buy from his grandma at stores with these gold diamonds you collect. And there's unlockable levels. There's 20 main ones. And then there are four worlds with four levels each. And then if you collect all the, you know, diamonds littered throughout each world, then you can unlock a fifth world with four more levels. And then each level contains another secret entire level, which there's more to the game there too. But it seems to be really, really cool, and I hope it comes out sooner rather than later, because it could be a landmark title for eShop.
So that's definitely a download title.
Yes.
And can you say the name of it one more time?
It is Mutant Muds from Renegade Kid. Mutant Muds, and it's developed by Renegade Kid.
Okay, and those are the guys who did Dementium and Moon on the DS. So I'm sure a lot of our listeners are fans of their work previously. And, you know, I think well, it does sound really interesting. I mean, Wario Land on Virtual Boy is an amazing game. Very few people have really got the chance to play it. But it's basically a 2D platformer on multiple planes of depth with some interaction. So you're either like throwing things or knocking things back and forth between the two planes, and sometimes traveling as well. So anything that even broaches those subjects in terms of gameplay, I think, is pretty cool. Now, Neil and I both got to play the BitTrip Saga demo from Gaijin Games today. And, you know, I think we're both pretty big fans of BitTrip. And the first thing I asked, we were speaking to Alex Noisy, the head of the company there, and really the lead creator of the BitTrip series. And the first thing I asked him is, Alex, I already own all six of these games on the Wii, through WiiWare. Why should I buy it on 3DS? And he said, well, you should buy it on 3DS if you care about portability, which is a great feature. And I think these games lend themselves well to being portable, certainly. They're all pretty short, pretty fast-paced, very arcadey. So that all makes a lot of sense. And he said, if you value them being in 3D. Now, it's hard for me to place a value on the 3D effect, but if I did, it would be a low value, because it's just a very superficial thing. But I will say that they seem to be doing a pretty good job with it in the adaptation in the parts of the game that we saw. And in some cases, it actually looked a lot better than I expected. Like on BitTrip Beat, this is a game that is essentially styled after an Atari 2600 game. There's not a lot going on screen at any given time. I mean, there's this Pong bar moving up and down, and there are big chunky pixel dots moving across the screen. And at the lower levels of gameplay, it really doesn't, being in 3D really doesn't add much to it. But then as you do better and you get up to ultra, mega, whatever they are, I actually tested Alex to see if he could name off the different levels in order, and he did, but he had to think about it a little bit. I think he mentioned that he kind of regrets going with that because it is so difficult to tell which ones are better than others. But anyway, as you get to the higher levels and the graphic style becomes busier and more colorful and more bombastic, to match the higher level of play that you're at, the 3D effects really kick in, and it starts to look really interesting, actually, just because there are a lot more particles coming off of things, there are a lot more flashing colors, and there's just more in the background, and there's more to look at. And it's one of those things where the less there is to look at, the less 3D really matters. And then he did mention that once you get into the nether zone, which basically means that you're about to die if you don't improve your performance, they actually turn off 3D and at the software level. So even if you have the 3D slider all the way up, if you get into the nether and you're about to die, they actually force it off, either as possibly as punishment or maybe just to help you avoid distractions so that you can recover from that and start building it back up. I thought it was a really cool idea, and it'll be interesting to see if other developers take advantage of the ability to turn 3D off at certain moments in gameplay or under certain circumstances. So Neil, what's the next thing that you wanted to bring up here for the wrap-up show?
Actually, it was BitTrip Saga, but you covered that pretty succinctly. So, I guess the last thing about that is that I hate them because I kind of want it on 3DS, but at the same time, I already own all the games. And there's also that Wii disc that they're going to be bringing out. Potentially, at least the plan is a simultaneous release for the 3DS BitTrip Saga, and then this Wii disc version of all the BitTrip games that's going to include something like I believe 120 challenge levels that are in addition to that, with 20 for each game, and then I think there's more bonuses along with that. We have a news story about it that Johnny wrote up earlier. But that seems like that could be the better package. But then again, I already own all those games on Wii, so that'll be even harder to justify. But I really like the BitTrip games, and I really like the guys who make them. So, I mean, I hope that people do buy them, even if it's not me.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with you that at this point, there are so many ways. There are going to be so many ways to buy these. I mean, they're also on the iPhone, iPad OS, and you know, those are legitimate versions as well, and they're quite affordable. So if you have access to those, you might want to consider those. I mean, we don't know what these retail versions are going to be priced at, but I think for fans of the series, we really are wrestling with a lot of these questions of should I buy this stuff? Am I really going to get my money's worth out of it? And then, you know, at the same time, I am very happy for these guys because these are really good games and they're getting more exposure for them, and they're moving from WiiWare to retail, which not many companies have done. So I think it's cool, you know, to have put a lot of time and effort into this series of games, to have a lot of underground kind of reputation and cult status for them, and then to have a chance to actually put it out there in retail on the shelf and have this boxed copy that will get a lot more exposure to a much wider range of people. It's just, these are such niche games. They're so hardcore, you know, they have such a weird, potentially off-putting graphical style. They're so difficult that I wonder whether the type of crowd who, you know, doesn't buy a game unless they see it at Walmart, are they really going to pick up Bit Trip Saga? I mean, and if they do, are they really going to be happy about it? That's what I'm not sure about, because as much as I love these games, certainly they're not for everyone. But, you know, it'll be really interesting to see, and I am glad that they're doing a lot more with it. And, you know, I think this series is going to continue in one form or another, even beyond these compilations. So we'll have to see about that. Both of these are coming out in late summer, and then these guys work on a pretty accelerated time schedule, so it probably won't be that much longer after that before we find out what they're doing next. Now, Neil, before you go, we both sat through a demo for Spider-Man and X-Men, and I think X-Men is the more interesting game to talk about here, chiefly because it is being made by our friends at Silicon Knights, who developed Eternal Darkness and Metal Gear Solid, the Twin Snakes, and then later the less luminous Too Human on Xbox 360. And now they are going multi-platform for the first time, really. And we found out today, we confirmed that they are making the Wii version of X-Men Destiny along with the PS3 and Xbox 360 versions. So I think we did an interview a few years ago where Dennis Dyack, I think he pretty much said they would never make a game for Wii, or at least they certainly weren't interested in the direction Nintendo had taken with the console and its design. But here they are. Maybe they've been humbled by the Too Human experience. I don't know. But they are making a Wii game, and it's X-Men Destiny, and it actually looks pretty good, I think. I'm pretty impressed with what I saw. The initial screenshots that came out were not good, were not flattering whatsoever, but the game actually does look pretty good in motion, and I think it has a lot of interesting ideas that it's messing around with, including a few things that were intended to be explored in Too Human, and by the time the final game came out, had really been left by the wayside. So it definitely has that mark of Silicon Knights on it, even though it's a licensed property. And I'm pretty excited to see more about it. Neil, what did you think?
I missed the first bit of the demo because Jared and I were actually interviewing someone from Beenox about the Spider-Man game, which I'll make a brief comment after I talk about X-Men for a little bit. But from what I saw about it, my interest has definitely peaked. The whole conceit behind it is that there's these three new mutant characters that I guess can borrow the powers of all the mutants you know and love, you know, your Cyclopses, your Wolverine, your Gambits, etc., etc. And it's these characters' origin stories, so you make these decisions between, you know, going with the Brotherhood or going with the X-Men, which definitely goes in with Silicon Knights, is always talked about and, you know, kind of done in the past with, you know, all these moral dilemmas and, you know, deciding between them. Although this seems like it's going to be very, very black and white, which isn't really a bad thing. But, I mean, it's really easy to determine, you know, okay, here's the good answer and here's the bad answer. Although you might not know the outcome. And I know as far as with the previous Marvel game, I know Spider-Man Web of Shadows actually had several different endings that you could get that would kind of, you know, it depended on what decisions you made when that would add up to these endings, which maybe X-Men will do something like that too, which would be pretty cool. But as far as, you know, the gameplay and everything, it looks like it's going to be kind of like a action brawler, which could be a lot of fun. And looking forward to seeing how it's going to turn out. Shouldn't be too long. It's coming out in September. So that's good.
All right. Well, as for Spider-Man, seems in terms of gameplay very similar to the past couple of Spider-Man games. I think they've tightened up the story elements a lot since last year's game, Shattered Dimensions, and the voice acting definitely is a step up, which was a big sticking point for me last year.
Yeah, I mean, with the voice acting, you can kind of tell why it happened, was that the guy who did 2099 was terrible, so they replaced him with the guy who did Noir. And then the person who did Amazing Spider-Man last year was Neil Patrick Harris, so he probably was not in the budget, so they got the guy who voiced Ultimate Spider-Man and did the excellent Spectacular Spider-Man cartoon show from a couple years ago to voice Amazing Spider-Man, and they seem to have a really good repartee in the game, which is important because there's these kind of picture-in-picture moments where Spider-Man 2099 is talking to Amazing Spider-Man, and they interact a lot. The one disappointing thing about that game, I mean, it looks like it's going to be a good successor to Shattered Dimensions, where it takes what was laid out in that game, which there were problems with it, but it was rather good and it improves upon it. But it doesn't look like we're going to get that Metroidvania game that we've gotten with the past couple Spider-Man games. Instead, the 3DS version is actually going to be pretty much just a port of the Wii 360 PS3 version, which I guess it's a little disappointing because I'd much rather prefer having the Metroidvania games, even though I know I don't like them quite as much as Johnny does. There's a little hope for that, though. There's a DS version developed by Other Ocean, but they're not Griptonite, who made the other two. So who knows? But that's Spider-Man. And I want to just mention briefly about the Spyro game, Skylanders, which I probably saw more than I ever really had to about it. But it seems pretty cool because it has all those the figures that you have the portal that will hook up to your system, and then you put these figures onto the portal, and then they go into the game, and you do stuff in the game, and you can take them off the portal, take them to a friend's house, etc., like PR bullshit speak. But what's really cool about that is that it's compatible with every version of the game. So, you could be playing the Wii version and then take your character and put it in the 360, PS3, or 3DS version. The 3DS version is developed by Vicarious Visions. The other versions are developed by Toys for Bob, who I can't really think of what else they've done. I think they're an Activision subsidiary, though. But Vicarious Visions is notorious for using more of the system than everyone else seems to do, as they did with downloadable content in the Guitar Hero games on Wii. And they're actually using the IR port of the 3DS to connect to the portal, which, as far as I know, and I think everyone knows, the IR port on the 3DS has not been used in a game yet. So I guess that's an interesting tidbit. But I actually think the Skylanders games look kind of cool. It's basically like a Lego-esque game. There seems to be a lot of those, I guess, because they're really popular. That's what it seems to be like on the Wii, PS3, and 360. They're all identical games. Activision seems to be doing that with all their big games, or at least the games that they've shown, with Spider-Man, X-Men, and Skylanders all being like that. And there's a cool little 1v1 multiplayer mode that seems reminiscent of the James Bond Everything or Nothing multiplayer on GameCube, which I thought was really awesome and underrated. I don't know if anyone else played that besides me in this room, but the Everything or Nothing multiplayer in that Bond game on GameCube is, I think, severely underrated, and there needs to be more games like that. It's kind of arena-like, like Power Stone, but in a different manner. And the 3DS version is a completely different experience from the other ones, and is actually kind of more of a like 3D platformer as opposed to an action Lego-y game. Like I saw more of Skylanders, I probably talked more about it than it needed to now, but I actually think it is pretty cool for the markets it's intended to, and maybe even more than that. So keep an eye out on it.
And just to be clear, thanks, Neil. Just to be clear, the Skylanders is a Spyro, sort of a revival of Spyro the Dragon. Yeah. So after many years of legal wranglings and, I don't know, I guess property sales or something, Activision has somehow ended up with the license for Spyro the Dragon, and this is how they've chosen to bring it back.
Well, I don't think it was really that much of a licensing problem with that, because I guess the Vivendi merger, I forget the exactly what happened with that, but because Activision did release the Spyro game, I want to say 2007 or 2008, I think it was the first full year it was on the site, because I reviewed the Crash Bandicoot games that came out that year that were from Activision, and I think just what happened there is that they didn't quite know what to do with the series, and I don't think it took them too long to figure that out, because Skylanders has been in development for, I believe, 2.5 years, so it's a long-ass time.
All right, well, now we're going to switch out, and I think James is going to come over and take the seat. Now, James and I have had an interesting couple of days. We've actually met a number of people who listen to the show and who have been up here at E3, so that's been really fun. James, looked like you were, I'm sorry, I might have pulled you out at a dramatic moment in the series of battles here, but if you can think about back to E3 all those hours ago, what do you have to say about the last day of E3? What did you see that you actually liked?
Well, I've not really spoken about a lot of what I saw at E3 in general. I've been sort of locked away when the recording takes either asleep or writing or both. But one of the, I'll speak about a game that not necessarily I liked, but is interesting. And I'm not sure that it's come up on the show, is the direction with which the Metal Gear Solid game on 3DS has gone. I'm not sure how much it's been discussed.
None.
Yeah, that's kind of telling, because it took day 3 before we actually had impressions for it, and that's just because I finally decided, well, crap, I better do it. Last year, that was one of those games, lose a loose term, that we walked away really impressed by, but ultimately it was the same kind of demo that the Wii U units have for Zelda and for the Japanese garden bird simulator, where it's basically you're just interacting with the camera. When we got our hands on the game this week, there were some instantly telling problems with controls that have manifested in the loss of the second control stick, as opposed to adopting kind of a gyroscopic controls to make up for it, which I can understand not wanting to do, because there are some games that do that and with mixed results. They've just sort of mapped camera controls to the face buttons, which means they've mapped action controls to the D-pad and the shoulder buttons, which means they've created context-sensitive shoulder buttons, which means they've had to move some context creation to the touchpad, which makes the entire thing a bit akin to learning calculus. It took me about 2.5 playthroughs of the demo, which is not a short demo. It's about 15 minutes to really understand exactly how the controls work and be able to at least get from point A to point B without being utterly befuddled by what I was doing. Usually when you go through it, you're kind of stuck staring at something and wondering why you're not going in the direction you meant to go. And it's usually your fault insofar as you've misinterpreted what a button is designed to do. The game is incredibly green and brown, which there's kind of an industry joke about games being brown and browner. This game's kind of green and brown, and it's nice to get two colors, but it really can make, on a small screen like that, it can make it difficult to judge hostiles and trees from as being different things. Because ultimately, you're just shooting tranquilizers into a tree at long range. You're not really accomplishing anything. I did feel a bit better about the game after I played it the second and a half time. And I was able to get through the demo and not wander around trying to figure out what the hell was going on. It seems like that's kind of a terrifying thought that it took 2.5 playthroughs of the same 15 minutes of gameplay for me to really feel at least somewhat comfortable with the game as it's structured. But it has a chance of being a decent title, but it needs work. And I am concerned that the loss of a second analog stick is going to hamper games similarly in the future going forward. They're not going to be the only ones who have to struggle with this downporting to the 3DS issue where you suddenly don't have that second analog stick. Luigi's Mansion is one of the games that handles it with the gyro, but it works better in that game because ultimately you're not really controlling the camera. You're just sort of controlling where Luigi himself is pointing, but you're still only moving him on really two axes, in and around. This is a game where it's more, you know, right behind you, and it's much different that way.
Well, James, while I've got you here, I would really be failing in my duties to not ask you about Picture Lives. Now, Picture Lives is not a game that was really announced in any way. It wasn't shown. It's just a demo that's there. It's just one of those things that appears at Nintendo's booth, and we're like, what the hell is this? And we play it, and then we're like, what the hell is this? So maybe you could briefly describe Picture Lives to the best of your ability and give us your thoughts on what was going through your mind as you experienced this bizarre, strange game.
Methadone is probably the first thought I had, because this has got to be like some kind of drug replacement. Picture Lives is this weird creature creator, somewhat like Spore, but much less sophisticated, where you basically build a body, stick legs on it, put a mouth and eyes on it, and call it a day. And then you have to control it through these sort of bizarre stylus-based controls where either you make it slowly scamper like a crab sideways from one way or the other, or you cause it to, or you pull down on it and cause its legs to catapult it into a direction of which you have very limited control. Your creature, the picture, which lives apparently through a heart transfusion, begins to consume whatever food it finds lying around, and then it interacts with these characters it sees that are equally screwed up. They give you quests, and their quests involve feces, and sometimes you're... I'm not making any of this up. I really am not. Occasionally your character will go to the bathroom on the ground, and your character will often lay eggs that you have to collect, and then at the end of the quote day, when it's time for your creature to quote go home, you will be given your eggs in like an egg carton and then be told to crack open your own eggs as fast as you can for bonus points. At which point coins spill out of them, determined entirely by how quickly you broke open what would be your own offspring. Game is... I just, honestly, when I was playing it, I looked at the PR rep about 12 times and just asked her, has this happened with previous playthroughs? And she says, no. Because there's so many whacked things in the demo that she honestly hadn't seen them all yet. At one point, I found a key. She said there's a treasure chest that goes with it, but she's never seen it. Maybe it's not there. I wouldn't be particularly surprised. The game looks kind of like a storybook art. You know, it's really colorful, pastels, like construction paper kind of stuff. It's very attractive, but it really... I don't know what the hell's going on in that game. I'm not sure that it is a game. I mean, I know it's a 3DS download title. I wrote impressions about it, but you won't get anything out of those that you didn't get out of this, because, wow.
Yeah, I really would recommend that our listeners go read your impressions, because they're really funny. And this game is fascinating, and I mean, in the most morbid way for me. I played it too, and I had a very similar experience to you. Like, what the hell am I doing? And again, the poor girl running the demo did not seem to understand it any more than I did. But yes, there is a mission or a quest or something apparently involving poop and finding a toilet to flush it down with your googly-eyed man, like, customized creature. It is completely bizarre. And the only, other than the obvious Spore reference, because you do sort of build this creature out of some parts and then watch it animate in a hilarious way. But I also had to think of Nobi Nobi Boy just in terms of sheer absurdity and confusion in terms of how to play it and what you're supposed to do. So if you like those, that kind of like super weird, hilarious, bizarre thing, I could see this being really cool. And I heard someone talk about Street Pass. Was that confirmed? Okay, Neil's reaching for the mic, so...
Yeah, when I looked up about the game and also talked to the person there, she said that you could Street Pass and share your creature with other people. So, I mean, I don't really know how that would fit into the grand scheme of the game, which I'm not even really sure what that is. But it looks like you will be able to share your characters with people as you pass by, which, I mean, could make it a entertaining download on the eShop as long as it's not too expensive. I wouldn't even be surprised if when this comes out it might be another free download a la the Pokedex 3D, but we'll see. Maybe.
All right, well, it's a good thing Neil had run out of lives in Brawl, or else he wouldn't have been able to give you that piece of information. So, I certainly think that this is the kind of thing where I would like to see what other people have created with it. And, you know, given the legacy of Spore, there's obviously a lot of interest in that in the marketplace. So I think it could be really cool. And, you know, one thing that we've learned from E3 in general, I think collectively, is that Street Pass is really awesome and really powerful as a way to get you interested in your 3DS and get you interested in the people around you and the, you know, the people who you might have passed by. And it gives you the most minimal glimpse into someone else's life, into what someone else has been doing or what they might have to say to you. But it's really addictive and it's really fascinating.
To that respect, I have one question for Johnny, and it's, are you happy?
Yeah, that was the personal message provided by Professor Tezuka, the famed Nintendo designer who I think he produced or did the level design for Super Mario Brothers and Mario 3 and other games. And I think he's semi-retired from Nintendo at this point, but we ran into him many times. I think he's like a level 3 or 4 me in my on my 3DS, because I've happened to pass by him so many times. And he lays out this very deep philosophical question when you Street Pass with him, in which he asks, are you happy? And also his me looks eerily like him in the most disturbing way possible. But yeah, I mean, Street Pass is, I was very skeptical of how much fun it could really be street passing with people and, you know, and how much I would get out of it. And even today, after really about 4 days of carrying 3DS around with me and running into a lot of people, I'm still pulling it out at anytime I have just 2 or 3 minutes with any kind of downtime at all, even sometimes when I probably should be doing other things, I find myself, you know, opening the 3DS and seeing if I've collected anyone. And of course at E3, quite often you will collect the maximum, and so it helps to check it off and to clear that queue out so that you can find 10 more people. I've got over 400 street passes at this point in about 4 days of E3 type activities. And it's going to really suck going home and probably not getting many street passes at all for the next few months, because I have enjoyed it a hell of a lot. And it's made me very, very glad that I did purchase a 3DS before I came here. And I was very much looking to hear what 3DS developers plan to do with Street Pass. And we really didn't hear much from very many of the games that we saw. A lot of them, it seems to be indeterminate, or else they're not really planning to use it for whatever reason. We even heard that apparently some of the Western developers aren't planning to support it just because they don't expect that the people in their markets, their target audience, would really have a use for it, you know, would ever meet enough people to make it worth the effort of supporting. But I hope that they do anyway. I mean, obviously people in urban environments will get to Street Pass, and people who are really interested in it and can attend events and plan events and things like that. And then, you know, even if it's something that you only get to do once a year at some kind of gathering, you know, you go to Comic-Con or PAX or something like E3, I think that though these experiences are, they do make it worth supporting this stuff, because people are really, really into it. I mean, it was not unusual to go to any given place in E3 and see all kinds of people with their 3DSs out checking them. It seems like everybody was doing this. This was really the metagame of E3, and nearly everybody was really into it. That was just a very popular topic when we ran into our friends, was, you know, I hope that our Miis that were exchanged, because I'm trying to beat that boss in Find Me on the second time through.
It's not dissimilar to what we saw when we had the gold and silver PokeWalker things at PAX East, in which people were running down lines begging to do gift swaps and things. And I wonder how much experimentation that was for Nintendo as a whole, but it's kind of an interesting little thing that will only exist in the cultures that surround these kinds of conventions. Because even if you live in an urban environment where you'll get a significant number of street passes, it's not going to be a situation where people are kind of milling about in a large confined space with the hugely disproportionate number of 3DS owners actively seeking to engage in street pass data.
Yeah, I mean, you're totally right. There is a certain critical mass that you have to build up for this to really be as entertaining as it has been. And yet, I feel like the result is so astounding. I mean, people are so addicted to it, and I've been so entertained by it that I want this to happen more often. You know, I want to look for opportunities when this might be possible. You know, I want to encourage people to carry their 3DSs, because when you do find this kind of large group of people with a high percentage of them using StreetPass, it's kind of a magical experience. You know, it's one of those things that Nintendo is always promising and talking about. It's very pie in the sky, and it's easy to be cynical about it, but when it does actually work, it's really kind of amazing. And I think this was really a validation of a lot of the things that Nintendo is always talking about and trying to accomplish. And again, it is a very specific kind of event and a specific kind of a place that you have to put together to make it happen, but it's worth it. I mean, it was awesome. You know, I can't wait to do it next year too. I hope it's still something that people are interested in doing a year from now.
It's kind of funny that this Johnny had just mentioned that this is the kind of magical experience that Nintendo always likes to promise and sometimes delivers. It's kind of funny that the first time that anybody probably really experienced the full depth of the so-called magic are the journalists to whom they're always trying to sell it, and who are so cynically basically saying, God, it's that same pitch again. So for once, the target conduit actually was the receptacle of what they're trying to sell, instead of the consumers who probably won't get to experience it that on that large a scale until something like PAX rolls around in September, August. So that might be the first time in North America there's going to be something similar to this. And I mean, by then, who knows what the situation will be with the 3DS.
All right. Well, of course, we hear from James every week, so he's going to have plenty of opportunities to talk about all the other games that he played at the show here. So I'm going to bring in Mike, TYP, who I'm sure has been ripping it up in Smash Brothers as usual.
There were some really good battles between me and Jared at the end. I mean, there were some epic battles going on there. So Jared's pretty good.
I'm not surprised by that.
Well, you haven't been playing some things about you.
All right. So, Mike, one of the things that we spent some time today traveling together,
yeah.
And one of the games that we both got to play was Cave Story, and I see that it's on your list there. So maybe I can set you up for this. Cave Story 3D was being presented by a couple of people from NIS America, Nipponichi Software America, who were tucked away in the Tecmo Koei booth. And Mike, I had been over there before, so I knew who to look for, but you got there first today, and you were over there wandering around. You didn't know who to talk to or where these people were. They were hidden in plain sight. So once I was there and we met up and we actually started the appointment, they just handed us the game and let us play it. And really, I think when we're both familiar with Cave Story, we've played it on WiiWare, and I think we both really like it a lot. What I was really surprised by in Cave Story 3D is how different it looks. And unlike BitTrip Saga, where they're just taking the WiiWare games and basically just shoving them together and putting them on a cartridge for the 3DS. I mean, they're doing the 3D effects, which is cool, but for the most part, they're very straight ports. You know, these are games that you've already played in the pretty much the exact same way. Cave Story 3D is, although the same game at its core, it looks so entirely different that I feel like you're going to get a really shockingly different experience out of playing through this version of the game. And I got that, the amazing thing is I got that sensation in about 20 seconds of playing it. So I'd like to hear what your impression of it was as well.
Well, I agree. It seemed like a lot of the visual cues you subtly rely upon just sort of aren't there, that, you know, the assets are no longer tile art, right? It's full 3D assets. And so things look different. It's kind of darker looking. In fact, I think it's too dark. I know before I played it, I'd heard comments, people complaining about it being dark, and people responding, well, yeah, it takes place in a cave, so no duh. But it's so, kind of going back to what was said earlier, it's so brown and so gray that things don't stand out very much. And especially for someone like me who's red-green colorblind, the browns and greens often kind of blur, especially when they're very muted colors. So that didn't help either. So I had trouble seeing where the platforms were. I found that turning on the 3D really helped some in seeing where the platforms were, and maybe that's part of what they're going for. But it's like you're disoriented. I was playing a level I knew pretty well, but it's like, wait, where do I need to go in the egg quarter here? Where do I jump? Where, you know, which egg do I need to go into? I don't remember. So it is feel new. I'm a little concerned that it doesn't look as appealing or as charming in this mode. I think they do include the original art as well. We didn't get to see that, but I mean, that would be comparable to what you'd get on DSiWare, I'd imagine. I mean, the remixed music, sorry, hold on. Neil
has a comment.
The way they're doing the original art is you can just switch the character sprites, but it'll just keep the same, like, I guess the backgrounds. So it's not necessarily like you'll switch between, like how in the WiiWare one, you could switch between literally the original graphics and the WiiWare updated graphics. In this one, I believe it's only like the sprites in the 3D worlds.
Okay, that's an interesting clarification there.
Yeah, that's not what was told to us on the show floor. They said they had the original graphics that they were going to be including. So we'll see there. They certainly had some 2D sprites left in there that they said they just hadn't created assets to replace those yet. Like the teleport. So it's certainly not done. It sounds like they're going to be delaying it a little longer. They're trying to polish things, but it's Cave Story. It's a good game. There's some interesting things they've added, like, in the cemetery area, you can see in the background, a part of another part of the cave that you can't access there, but it's kind of teasing, like, later in the game, you can access that, you know, cause it's a 3D cave, right? You're meandering through. So that's kind of cool. But I don't know. I mean, I played the WiiWare game. I think I'm – I like the WiiWare game more than what I played there, but that's kind of a personal preference thing. And they really are going for a new market is what they're aiming for. So maybe, you know, maybe it's okay if I don't like it. If other people who want 3D graphics play it, that's great.
Yeah, again, I think it's notable that this is the first actual retail release of Cave Story, and that's a big deal for them, for the creator, of course, Daisuke, the man known as Pixel. And he is overseeing development, so they're sending builds over to him quite often, and he basically approves it or has comments on, you know, you should fix this, you should change this. Because he, in the original Cave Story, he did everything. He did the music and the art and the programming and the level design and everything. So he knows that game better than anyone, and so they really want to make sure that he's pleased with it. And that's, you know, they seem to be taking a lot of care with it. I think in terms of it being too dark or looking too different, I think it's mostly personal preference. I actually kind of liked how it was, because it's now a 3D game and now they have lighting, mm-hmm. That also means that not only can they use lighting, but they can use darkness, whereas in a sprite-based game, it's difficult to do darkness because it just kind of turns everything black and you just can't see anything. It's very difficult to do that in a subtle way in a 2D sprite art game. And, you know, I think at the same time, I agree with you that in the original pixel art, there's a certain starkness and contrast and boldness of color that makes it easier to pick things out in the environment. It makes it easier to identify visually what's interactive and what's not, what's an enemy and what's friendly, etc. And I found myself being quite disoriented by areas that I am very familiar with from the WiiWare version. I've played through that game multiple times on WiiWare, and yet I was struggling a little bit in terms of where can I jump and what are the enemies, you know, and things like that. And I certainly think it's something that you could get accustomed to after playing it for a while. But again, I think if this is your first time playing Cave Story, it'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Because it certainly doesn't look bad. I think it actually looks really good. But again, it looks so different from the original version or the WiiWare version that it's like a completely different game, which is actually could be a great benefit for those of us who would be replaying it. Because if you're going to be paying your $30 or $40 for the 3DS version, I think there's a certain value in having it feel so fresh that you actually don't even recognize some of the locations, because then it really does feel like a completely new experience for you, and it's not as familiar, it's not as recycled. But I was quite surprised at just how much had gone into redeveloping that game. I was surprised at how much the depth of the backgrounds added to the feel of the place. You know, I mean, in a 2D pixel art game, I mean, Cave Story doesn't have much in the way of backgrounds. You know, they're simple by necessity in some cases. And in this now, because the levels and the characters are all made of polygons, there's a ton of depth. I mean, in the old days, we might call it parallax scrolling, but that was more of a 16-bit effect. So it's not really represented in Cave Story because that's based on more of an 8-bit aesthetic. So now that you're in full 3D polygons, you've got a ton of space to work with that goes way back into the environment. And all of that's enhanced by the 3DS screen, of course. But even with the 3D effect turned off, there's so much more to look at. You know, there's a lot more detail in the environment, and some of it really adds a sense of this is a large volume that you're moving through, and there's more to this world than just the small sliver of it that you interact with. So it really does change the feel of the game in a surprising way, and it was much more pronounced than I expected going into it.
Yeah, it reminded me a little of some of the levels in, like, Donkey Kong Country Returns, where there's just so much in the background and foreground it really is just a cross-section of a larger world. I mean, it looks pretty. It's just, for me, just a little too dark for my taste. I mean,
yeah, I think that could possibly be tuned up again. So, you know, I'm with you. That's something that could be addressed. But overall, I do actually really like the way it looked more than I thought I would. And we should mention that there was the remixed music was playing, and we plugged in headphones. I thought it sounded really good.
I often am not one for remixed music in games. And ironically, I mean, I played the WiiWare version, so to me, that's the original music. But I felt like the remixing it, and sometimes once people are remixing these kinds of soundtracks, they're trying hard to make it sound different, like a remix, and sometimes the original charm gets lost and they're doing something in a different way than you originally heard it. And it's not bad. I think it's well done. I think I prefer the WiiWare music, but that, once again, personal preference. And maybe I just, you know, it's hard to, even with headphones, it's hard to hear everything in the music at E3. So I'm sure there's a bunch of stuff that I just didn't catch.
It's true. And the Cave Story soundtrack is pretty rich in terms of composition anyway. So there is a lot that you could miss on the show floor. And we should note that along with the having access to the original graphics, at least partially, maybe incomplete, it's not confirmed right now, I don't think, but there's a very good chance that you'll be able to play with the original music as well if you prefer that.
Yeah. Given how they handled the WiiWare game, I'd say there's like a 95% chance of that.
Now, Mike, before we wrap up the show, what else would you like to talk about?
Well, I'm not sure if anyone really talked much about Luigi's Mansion or Mario 3D. Was there much discussion in prior podcasts on that?
A little bit.
Well, I found that I replayed Mario 3D a bit more today. You know, I played it on the first day and I felt like the controls were kind of slippery, and I wasn't sure what to think. I even wound up asking a question about that at the Nintendo Roundtable on the first day. But I played more of it. It kind of grows on me a little bit. It's kind of weird because you're running, holding the run button, and that's very slippery. But if you don't run, you're just sort of walking. And I'm still not sure I like that. But I found like after a little more time with the game, I was able to control Mario better running. So my initial concerns maybe aren't as strong as they usually were on that game. I think there's some cool stuff in there. And of course, Luigi's Mansion. I think I touched on it when I was very distracted trying to write impressions of Luigi's Mansion on the press cast or whatever we're calling the one right after the press conference. And so I just wanted to point out that it really captures the GameCube game very well without feeling redundant. There's some very clever little stuff they've done. That there's a lot of humor in it, just like the original. But you know, the ghosts seem to be playing more pranks, even just in the little demo, than what we saw in the GameCube game. And I think Johnny's laughing at the way Squirtle's clapping right now. I just think there was a lot of charm in Luigi's Mansion, and it seemed like there's almost a little more puzzle solving in the demo available. I'm really looking forward to that. It's not really hard to do this with everyone making fun of Squirtle in the background. I'm just moving on. If I may indulge myself in talking about a game that isn't actually on Nintendo platforms, because I know Johnny and I played this together more or less. Final Fantasy 12-2. 13-2. See, it's hard. Final Fantasy 13. I like 12-2 as well, but I have never played that game. Final Fantasy 13-2. They had a demo on display. I thought that the plot was kind of hard to follow, if not batshit insane. I don't know what, if you have any thoughts on that, Johnny. It seemed like they were talking about alternate realities or alternate dimensions and other stuff like that. But the basic mechanics are the same in terms of the battle system, which I like, the paradigm system. But what they added that I thought was really cool was that before you enter a battle, there's a kind of a radius around an enemy where you can either choose to engage or escape. And if you take too long in that radius, then it's kind of like they start with an advantage. And if you attack the enemy first, then you get an advantage. So it's a little bit more like something you might see in, I don't know, like a Super Mario RPG or something, or Earthbound.
A little bit, yeah. It's more sophisticated than Earthbound, but it's the same idea that in terms of how you approach the enemy determines who takes the advantage once the battle starts. And FF13 technically had something like that, but it was really weirdly done and kind of unbalanced. So I think the way they're doing it in 13.2 makes more sense. It's explained better. There's more visual indication of it, and And I think it'll probably work out a lot better in the long term.
Yeah, so, you know, the demo didn't... It was hard to get a full feel for the game, but, it, I mean, it looks like if you like the battle system, they're fleshing it out. It's pretty good. It seemed like you could have monster allies, too, in the game, which I thought was kind of interesting. But, of course, that's not on a Nintendo system unless they do it. Not yet, but who knows? I mean, it's supposed to come out this year, but... Come on. Come on. Really? Is it really going to come out this year? Yeah. Well, we'll see. So that's about all I had. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll stick around for a sec because I actually had a few more comments on Mario and Luigi. And, you know, since you brought those up, I want to see if you have any reaction to this. So I think it's worth mentioning that pretty much all of us who've played Super Mario have had some kind of comment on the way it controls. And some people, Neil, I think, is more comfortable with it than some of the rest of us are. But for me, certainly, when I first played it, I immediately felt like there was something weird about the way it controlled. And it was hard to put my finger on it. There is something about the slipperiness of it, for sure, when you're running. And the very slow walking speed when you're not running. I think that the jumping it's a little bit hard to stay on an axis,
yeah,
when you jump.
I would agree with that.
Okay. Whereas like in say Galaxy 2, there are a lot of levels where the camera's pretty much fixed on a 2D plane. You still can move in and out of the depth, but you don't really need to. And you're not really punished for doing so, you know, like generally, like you won't fall off of platforms if you happen to move in or out a little bit, because they want to design the level as more or less a 2D level, right? So there's a fair bit of that in Galaxy 2, and it seems that way in Super Mario as well on 3DS until you actually do it, and then you do fall off the platform because you move in and out more than you want to. I think to some extent it's that the circle pad is not as accurate for this kind of thing as the nunchuck is for Galaxy 2. And I also think that the game isn't constraining you to the plane quite as much as Galaxy 2 was. And the other thing about it is I found that I was almost uncomfortable with the camera angle in Super Mario on 3DS because it's presented in this sort of diorama way, but the levels are laid out very much like they are in Galaxy 2.
Some of them are, yeah. I'd say that the underground level feels more like a new Super Mario Brothers level, but the ones that are like outside, like there were the first one they showed that I don't know how to say, it would be like a comparable to like the first world in Mario 3 maybe. And then there was another one that was very similar to some of the more abstract floaty Galaxy levels that where there were switches and you were walking on panels that would appear and disappear. And in those, definitely had a Galaxy feel without the Galaxy controls. And it was weird because it's like playing a Galaxy level with new Super Mario Brothers controls only in 3D. And it's weird. It's a weird juxtaposition, I think, and I'm not sure if it works or not.
Yeah, I feel like there's a fair bit of tuning left to be done on Super Mario. For one thing, again, I come back to the camera angle because it's something that I wouldn't have thought was that important in a game like this because it seems like a simple game, but once you start playing it, I found that the camera angle was really unsettling for me because it's very direct on. So you're playing these complex 3D games. It is a 3D Mario platformer with a static camera angle.
Well, it varies from the levels I found. I'd say that some of them, it is very much like a, looks like sky scrolling until you accidentally wall jump into whatever, something facing outward, and then you wind up falling in front of the screen and dying, which happened to me a lot in the first level.
That happened to me quite a bit as well. Yeah. So I think that's a good example of that. That I think it's proof that they need to work on that a little bit because that almost never happened to me in Galaxy.
Right, but the level that really reminded me of a Galaxy level, I think that they had the camera a little higher up, a little more like how they had in Galaxy. Maybe I had just gotten adjusted to the changes by the time I played this level, but it seemed to me like the camera was a little higher up and a little more isometric, not quite head on, and so I had was much easier to judge distance on those levels. And I even though there was a lot more, places where I could fall, I didn't fall as much because I wasn't trying to run left to right, but really running a little bit in or a little bit out, and then, oh crap, I'm dead. So that didn't happen to me. I think the camera probably has a lot to do with that.
Yeah, well, ironically, in a game where Miyamoto, for instance, has for a while been touting the benefits of a 3D display and helping you to judge distance in a Mario platformer, I found that in this game I actually had a lot more difficulty judging jumping distances than I have in any other 3D Mario. And I think the main reason for that is the static camera angle, which is very rigidly straight on. It just doesn't feel quite natural. In a game like Super Mario 64, it's always floating and you have a lot of control over it. In Sunshine, you pretty much are spinning it around Mario all the time to get the best angle on things. And then in the Galaxy series, it's dynamic and automatic, so it's pretty much always trying to present you with the best possible camera angle. In this game, it's just straight on. Whether that's the best or not, it just kind of stays there. And it's weird because you're still doing the same kinds of movements that you are in the other 3D platformers, but the camera always just sits there in exactly the same static position. And I think that really contributed to my awkward feeling of playing it. And after a while, I found that it actually helped in some cases for me to use the touchscreen button or the D-pad to tilt the camera off at about a 30-degree angle, which you really only have, that's really your only choice. You can sort of tilt it about 30 degrees to either the right or the left, or put it back in the central straight-on position. And I found that tilting it off to the side actually gave me a better isometric sense of where all of this stuff was, and it helped me a little bit with some of the jumps. But then the problem is, sometimes you've tilted it off to the wrong side for a particular jump, and then you have to tilt it back the other way for another one, and it's all handled with these digital sort of slow-paced notches in camera angle. So although that helped a little bit, I think in the long term that's not really a good solution to this problem.
Well, I think it gets back to what I said about that level that feels much more like a Galaxy level. Because in that level, you are doing a lot more running kind of into the screen instead of left to right. And so there is the sense of depth, and the 3D effect is more useful. And I think that gets at what you're saying about tilting the camera. Then you have a little bit of that depth to help you. And not necessarily even having the 3D on. I'm just saying the change in perspective makes it easier to judge, and it makes it easier to see when you are actually veering off to one side or the other than if it's head on.
Right. So while I can't say that I'm completely positive about Super Mario, I am hopeful, and I think the people at EAD Tokyo are very, very, very good developers, and I think they'll probably address these concerns before the game comes out. And in a number of other ways, I think the game looks very promising and exciting. I think there's some really cool stuff that they can do with it. I do want to end the show on a very positive note, and that would be my experience today playing Luigi's Mansion, which I wasn't really even planning to play. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the original Luigi's Mansion. I've played it a few times and I like it, but I wasn't all that excited about a sequel. I didn't really think it was a game that needed a sequel, quite frankly. I just wasn't planning to devote any time to the demo here at E3. But I found myself up there in that part of the booth, and I had a couple of extra minutes, and I decided to just give it a go because it was there and it was available. I almost immediately was glad that I did. I felt at home with it right away, and I was very, very impressed with how they handled the controls. This is being developed by Next Level Games, the people who made Punch-Out, and also Mario Strikers, both of the Mario Strikers games. And now this seems like a big shift for them going to something like Luigi's Mansion 2, but I think it's in really capable hands.
Yeah, I think because it's really cool. I mean, I'm glad to see that this developer has such breadth of competency. I mean, it's really comforting to see that they can go from something like Punch-Out to a sports game to a adventure action game, or I don't know what you would describe Luigi's Mansion. I don't know. I don't know what genre it falls into. But
it's ghost busting, I believe, is the genre. But you know, the original Luigi's Mansion, of course, is a twin stick. It's a dual joystick video game for GameCube, and because of that, I always felt that the controls were a little bit unwieldy. They were a little bit more complicated than I would expect from a Nintendo product, and of course, the 3DS only has one joystick. So in my head, and I think this is part of the reason I wasn't excited to play it, I just kind of assumed that you'd be moving Luigi with the face buttons and cardinal directions and then aiming the vacuum or the light with the circle pad or something like that. I just didn't see how this could possibly feel right. And I think what Next Level has pulled off, with probably a lot of help from Nintendo, I mean, Miyamoto said that he's sort of taken personal responsibility and a deep personal interest in this game because he had that connection to the original Luigi's Mansion. So maybe he's given them a lot of feedback on it. I don't know. But the interesting thing is that they have very successfully turned this into a single joystick game. You don't use the face buttons to move Luigi or anything like that. They've basically made Luigi point the flashlight and the vacuum cleaner wherever he happens to be facing at that time, wherever, you know, in the direction of his movement. And then once you start, once you hold down the light or you start activating the vacuum cleaner, he basically locks into that direction, and then the circle pad controls his movement in a strafing kind of way, with his directional facing locked in to whatever it was when you started that. I probably made it sound more complicated than it actually is, because what it amounts to is you play the game with one joystick and it feels exactly the way it should from the very beginning.
Yeah, think of it as like when you're playing Metroid Prime on the GameCube. Once you're walking around, you're pointing where you're walking, and then you lock onto an enemy, essentially, and then all of a sudden you're strafing. That's essentially what's going on in Luigi's Mansion.
That's right. And the only thing that you really lose in this setup is the ability to look up and down, which wasn't needed that much in the original game.
You can do that with the gyro sensor. So you actually tilt the screen up a little bit or down a little bit, and that gives Luigi up and down a little bit. It's not vital for most cases, but it does come into play a little bit.
Okay, I didn't even know you could use the gyros for that, because you can also use the X button.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was on the diagram. And so I was using that, but again, even in the original Luigi's Mansion, I suspect in the sequel as well, looking up and down is not something that you need to do very often.
Yeah.
And so it makes sense to sort of remove that from the joystick, you know, and it works really, really well. And the other thing I know want to note about it is that I wasn't all that impressed. And if you go back and read the live blog from the press conference when they first showed the trailer, and that was the first we'd ever heard of this game, was that trailer at the press conference. It was a surprise announcement. And as I was live blogging, I noted that the graphics don't look as good as the GameCube original, and you know, they didn't look all that great. Mm-hmm. Not that they look bad, but they were noticeably worse than the original GameCube game, which is 10 years old this year. After having played it today on an actual 3DS screen, I think it actually looks just as good as the GameCube game, and potentially a little bit better in certain ways. But it's one of the numerous cases I discovered this week that showing 3DS games on a big projection screen, or even on the LCD screens attached to capture units, which is how a lot of the third parties are doing it, really doesn't do them justice. The games look much, much better on the actual 3DS screen. And when you actually play it, I think you'll be much more impressed with it. And so maybe that's a good reason to let people know that a lot of these games have 3D video trailers on the eShop now. So if you have a 3DS and you would like to see these, that is probably the absolute best way to check out these games for yourself, because if you go watch it on YouTube or something like that, they're not going to look nearly as good. And Luigi's Mansion 2 actually looks fantastic, I think, on the 3DS screen. I was very surprised by it.
Yeah, I mean, it's early. I think some of the lighting effects aren't as complex as what we saw on the GameCube, but, you know, in some ways the GameCube probably has better lighting effect processing than a portable. But I absolutely agree with you. I also saw instances where the capture devices causes a bit of input lag and or graininess because the different screens seems to interpret the 3D effect differently. So if it isn't turned off all the way, it looks ugly. And I have to imagine that every once in a while, direct feed from some place or another, they don't have the 3D off. And that's probably causing some of these problems too. So check out the video, 3D videos. I think it's really good that Nintendo's doing that because it's basically watching it in the native format, really. Right. I mean, it just makes sense.
Yeah, and we're supposed to have demos sometime later this year, too, and that's exciting as well. So everyone is starting to yawn, and the Smash Brothers rounds have ground to a halt. Neil is actually asleep, or was asleep in his chair a minute ago. So I think it's time to wrap up this podcast. So in the event that this is the last one of the show, which is quite possible, I want to thank everybody for listening to these. I know the sound quality has been hit or miss because we've recorded these in some pretty guerrilla type conditions, you know, which was intentional to some extent, but also born of necessity in some cases. And I hope that you appreciated our E3 coverage. We worked hard for you, and you know, and we enjoyed ourselves too. We had a really good time this year. It was nice to hang out. It was nice to see a lot of people, and we got to play some really cool games before they come out, which is really what E3 is all about. And that's why everybody wants to go to it, and that's why you know, that's one of the reasons that we keep coming back year after year. But I had a really good time. I'm very glad that I was able to make it out here, and you know, hopefully I'll be able to come out again next year. I hope all of us will be. I don't know what circumstances will allow, but it was really fun, and I've enjoyed spending the time with you guys. And on a personal note, I want to thank all of you guys for taking the time to do all these podcasts with me, and coming over here and talking to me as well. So with that, we'll bid you adieu. And if you don't hear from us in the next couple of days, then we'll listen for the next regular episode of Radio Free Nintendo, which will be coming out next Sunday, I believe. And, of course, the NWR newscast, probably returning next weekend. And Radio Trivia Podcast Edition returning. Returning who knows, right? Yes, but look forward
sometime soon.
Yes, of course, we always look forward to that as well. So anyway, that's it from E3. We are signing off. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.